Hello, and welcome to this episode of Nucleus Wealth and Power, where I, Shelley George, Head of Operations at Nucleus Wealth, go looking for the good life, and what it is, and how finance can support and empower us in achieving that. I'd like to start the episode in the spirit of reconciliation by acknowledging the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. I pay my respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. So this episode is the second part of last week's one, where we established a framework for understanding portfolio construction and used that to analyse the Nucleus Wealth March Performance Report. I'm lucky enough to be joined for the third week in a row by my colleague Damien Klassen, Head of Investments at Nucleus Wealth. Damien, welcome, and thank you for the gracious use of your time.
Thanks, Shelley.
So a quick reminder before we get started, if you haven't already subscribed, hit that button, click the notification bell if you want to be notified when we go live or have a new webinar to watch, or follow us on your preferred podcast platform. I also ask that if you could take a moment to like the video now, it'd be much appreciated and you can help our show grow. Okay, so one of the big things or themes that I saw in the March performance report was this idea of when bad news is actually good news for the market. So I'll hand over to you in a minute to explain what that exactly means. But I'm sort of interested in like where this began, because I don't know, for me, the first time I heard about it was in 2009, the depths of the S&P 500 crash in the GFC. The Fed started printing money sort of willy-nilly, one might say. And it seemed that every time there was a bad print, the market rallied off the back of that. So have you heard of this term before then? Do you know where the origins of it is, maybe?
I don't know where the origins are. I guess maybe Googling it afterward might before the show might have been good. But I think that the idea is very much that it's a narrative that sort of ran for most of last year, which was that anything bad that happens is actually good because it means central banks are going to step in and do more, and governments would keep spending more money for longer. And so, so it's what we saw for most of that, for most of 2020, up until about November. And then in November, there was this really sharp divergence where we had, in a short period of time, we had a number of vaccines come out with extremely high efficacy. And we had Biden voted in, all within a few weeks of each other. And so the outlook sort of went from being, okay, we're reliant on central governments and banks to keep bailing us out until things get better, to, oh, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And we have a new president who quite potentially will get out and spend more money and actually try and bridge some of that, some of the real issue that I think most people see. Well, sorry, maybe not most, but a lot of people now see the real issue as being inequality, in that you give more money to rich people and they tend to save it. You give more money to poor people and they get out and spend it straight away. And we've got a real lack of demand. And so, and we've been trying to, and more and more money's been going to the rich people. So we need to reverse that to get demand going. And so Biden's sort of a good hope in terms of it happening.
So I think in the performance report you called that when good news is good news.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And so there's a third term?
Yeah, there's a third term. So the first one is there's still a potential for bad news to be good news going forward. And the idea there is that if growth starts to slow back and we get more bad news, is that some people have got the view that that's a good thing. Bond yields will fall a little bit more, and central banks will have to step back in, and mm-hmm. and that'll support. We'll have basically the same market we had last year. We'll keep having going forward.
So actually, though, a question on that: which one comes first, the bond yields or the central bank? The central bank doesn't step in because bond yields have fallen, right?
No, it's a mixture of the two.
So the bond yields come first because they think the central bank's
going to... No, it's a chicken and egg thing. Yeah.
Okay. Look,
sometimes, I mean, in some cases, it's the central bank saying, we will push rates down. Mm-hmm. In other times, it's the market going, well, economic conditions are bad. The central banks are going to have to step in and push rates down. And so let's try and get in front of the central bank, and then the central bank may not even need to, because the market's already done its work for it.
Yeah.
So, Then there's the good news is good news, which is economic growth is good. In particular, company profits have been very, very good. And they're in the US anyway, they're back above the levels they were at the start of 2020. And so, so profit growth is really what's most important for companies. There's talk about tax increases, but the tax increases are most likely to be gradual taxes over a period of time. So it's not sort of looking and saying, okay, we're going to throw on taxes, you know, as at tomorrow, and all of a sudden everyone, all these US companies have to pay higher rates of tax. It's more about saying, yes, companies will, but sort of more gradual. So the profit outlook's pretty good. And the idea is that if profits keep growing, that even though markets are expensive right now, you know, over a year, 2 year period, they could grow in. So they're just, you know, over a year, they might be a little bit expensive after a little year, and after 2 years, they might be back to being sort of average priced if you keep seeing the type of growth we're seeing coming through in terms of profits at the moment.
Okay, so when you say they're expensive, can you explain that a little bit deeper? What does that mean? What do they mean compared against
them? Yeah, so it's comparing the price you can buy for the stock versus the earnings or the cash flow that the stock is generating.
Okay,
yeah.
So if the earnings increase, then the value of the stock and the price of the stock should increase.
Yeah, that's right.
The value will increase, and the value will therefore increase towards what the actual price is. And yes. Then it won't be overvalued, possibly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, So we're sort of currently in this good news is good news. And the thing is, as well, is the stocks that are going to perform in one or the other are very different. So last year was all about growth stocks, and whether it's a Tesla or all the technology stocks like an Nvidia's and these sort of high profile growth stocks that were seen as, okay, if when there's no growth anywhere, if we can find stocks that are actually managing to grow and interest rates are really, really low, then we can afford to pay a lot more for those stocks, was a sort of narrative.
So why is interest rates important in the equation?
It's basically it's about opportunity cost. It's saying if I can put a dollar into a particularly safe investment and get back 5%, then I'm less inclined to go and take that money and risk it on a loss-making stock like a Tesla.
Okay.
Whereas if the best I can hope for is a 0% return by taking my money and sticking it in somewhere safe, then people start to go, well, rather than making no return on it, I may as well go and, you know, start gambling a little bit on some of these stocks that are actually growing.
Yep.
Now, the third option is the bad news is good news. Is the other way around. Is the good news is bad news, and that and what that is. There's a number of people out there sort of pushing this theory is that because the economy is starting to go well in the US and there's lots more stimulus being put at it, inflation's going to get out of control, and because inflation will get out of control, that's then going to crash the stock market.
Okay.
Bring the market
back
down.
So do you want to explain how that link works?
It's basically the opposite argument to the original one, which is things are bad, so central banks are going to have to step in and spend more money and prop up markets and give you that valuation issue, whereas now it's basically saying, okay, well, central bank is going to be pulling back and interest rates are going to be rising, and so therefore people start saying, oh, let me sell my Tesla shares and I'll get the 2% that I can get from investing in a government bond rather than gambling my money on Tesla.
So why, if inflation rallies, would that be bad? Would that crash the stock market?
Yeah, so it's a valuation argument, and it's an argument that basically it's effectively the converse of saying because the opposite happened last year where things were getting worse but stocks went up, therefore this year if things get better, stocks will fall. Is basically.
But is there a fundamental reason for?
Well, some of it's talking about the overvaluation part, and now that is a reliance upon saying if I use that risk-free thing I was talking about before, where I'm saying it's the opportunity cost. Whereas if I can get a higher return on taking no risk, then people will take money out of the stock market and put it back into the lower risk assets. But there's a little bit of a disconnect. Because the way to get yields to go up is that people take their money out of bonds and put them back into put them somewhere else. So there's a bit of cognitive dissonance.
So that's a bit of supply and demand,
right? Yeah. So That's to me the most, the least likely of all three to come out. We're more in the good news is good news camp. So, you know, depending upon which one you want to pick, you can get your path for how you think the market's going to travel going forward.
Right.
Our view is very much that the good news is genuine. There's genuine profit growth, which is showing up as markets are expensive, but they're getting less expensive as the profit growth comes through. And that if there's inflation, there will be inflation.
Okay.
It's more likely in our view though to be transitory and
as opposed to sustained.
Yeah, and if it's transitory, then central banks have already said they're going to look through it and they won't be raising rates.
Okay.
Until they can genuinely see that the economy has got rid of all the slack, got rid of all these excess workers that are out there. And that's so our view is that it's going to take a fair bit more growth before that really starts to kick through.
Okay. So at the end of or towards the end of the article, I think you mentioned something about one of your biggest concerns or the biggest risks would be policy mistakes.
Yes.
So is this another way of thinking, another way of interpreting good news is bad news in the sense that they start to see green shoots for recovery in the economy, they being the central banks, and then think, it's time to start putting the brakes on.
Yes.
So they're seeing good news and they're reacting by putting the brakes on, and then that translates to being this bad news.
Exactly. That's right. Okay. Yeah. And you know, another analogy I've been using as well in different ones is saying, you know, we've been in this drought where it was just like, we've got no growth. There's just no growth. We've not got no drought. And it started to rain. And all of a sudden people are saying, look out for the flood. The flood's coming. And we're just like, just a minute. We're in a drought still. It's only just started raining. Let's wait till we've had a few more days of rain first before we even start thinking about when the flood is. To me it's an argument that we're going to jump straight from drought into flood.
Okay.
And maybe we will, but it doesn't seem like the most likely outcome to me at the moment. You need a lot more and a lot more sustained government spending and borrowing to actually get out to cause that flood.
Okay. With respect to policy as well, so that was monetary policy. And then if we think about fiscal policy, is that another area you're concerned about?
Yeah, so it's both. It's both. I should have gone into that because that's what I've been trying to push in our Nucleus Investment Insights as well. Try to put it up every time, that one slide, just to say policy areas are our biggest worry, because the issue is we're in a very artificial market at the moment where central banks are pumping in negative interest rates in a lot of countries, zero interest rates mostly around the world. We've got there's been restrictions on bankruptcies. There's been people don't get evicted for not paying their mortgages or their rents. There's been all these different programs put in to help people throughout this whole thing. It's an artificial market.
And so actually, that's all come about from the bad news is good news, which is what we started with. Mm-hmm. So we had bad news, COVID lockdowns, and people are permanently or temporarily out of work, not able to pay mortgages, it flew through the whole system, companies going potentially bankrupt. So, governments around the world saw this and saw it coming, and so then they brought the good news in reaction to that, which was all of these policies that you've just talked about.
Mm.
So I guess that's putting a face to the bad news and the good news.
Yes, but these policies are you can't run your economy in the long term with these policies. So if you say, okay, we're just not going to let people go bankrupt or they don't have to go bankrupt, then people stop paying their bills.
Uh-huh.
And then other people start running into trouble because, the first people aren't. And so you can have – that could create major problems sort of down the track.
Okay.
But it needs to be – so they need to be withdrawn, but they need to be withdrawn in a staged fashion, so you don't just say, okay, everything's fixed, we're withdrawing everything and you crash the economy because, you've taken away all the support. And so it's a matter about saying, okay, are they going to withdraw the support at the right speed so that you don't end up with crashing the economy? And there is so much more extra debt out there now that interest rates are very limited. But the net effect of that is we're in an artificial market, and so the biggest um, the biggest thing that can go wrong is that governments get the going back to a real market, they get it wrong in terms of how fast they do it. And so that's, I'll try to put that slide up every week for ours, just as a reminder for myself as well as others that we're not in Kansas anymore. It's just, you know, we're in the world of Oz and things aren't normal, and we need to recognize that and keep a sharp eye out. We don't see any coming at the moment, but that's the biggest risk in any of these markets is policy error.
So from some of the headlines I saw in Australia this week about payrolls, it sounded like good news.
Yep.
So I guess a question is, what are the things that you're watching to see whether or not we're going to get catastrophic policy mistakes? How are you watching that situation to try and get ahead of it?
It's working out how staged the withdrawals are going to be. And at the moment, most countries are looking at relatively staged withdrawals or still continuing fiscal support. So it's looking at the actual levels of economic recovery that's going on. So it's fully expected that you get this very, very sharp bounce coming out of it, which is what we've seen. Now, the question is, so you fall from 100 down to 50 and you bounce very quickly back up to 80. Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, how quickly do you get back to 100? Is it now quite a slow step up, or is it a very sharp step back up to 100? We're expecting it to be more to slow down and to take a while to get back to that, you know, where you started from. This is for the whole economy, not company profits. Company profits are already there. They're already past 100 and headed to 110. They're already within the US at least.
So when you say the whole economy, what else are you looking at apart from company profits?
Oh, you're talking about consumers is the main. Yeah. So consumers and small businesses within it. So we're talking listed companies.
Yep.
So different to small businesses and consumers.
Okay.
So small business consumers still haven't reached back and getting that employment back to full rates. Mm-hmm. So we're expecting that'll slow down over the next little while. And it tends to happen with every recovery is that's what happens. You get this sharp bounce back, then you get this slow recovery. And then the question is, if stimulus gets withdrawn too quickly, like we saw following the financial crisis,
yep,
then that gets extended for a long, long time. Like the recovery from the financial crisis was one of the longest on records in terms of just taking forever because there wasn't enough fiscal stimulus. And secondly, it was withdrawn too early.
Okay.
And so, So that's what we think, though, they have learned from that lesson. And they certainly central banks and governments are talking like they've learned from the lesson, and they will keep it up. So, it's really just trying to measure those two. And we don't know for sure how it's going to go. And central banks and governments don't know how for sure it's going to go. Mm-hmm. It's now just a matter of calibrating to how fast are we seeing that employment growth get back. And there's a few different measures that we look at.
Yep.
Underemployment is probably a big one because we think the actual unemployment stats sometimes overstate how good things are. Wage growth is another major one. So employment and wage growth, they're actually probably the two key ones. A little bit inflation, but it sort of depends on what type of inflation it is. The key ones, if you want to look at anything, underemployment statistics and wage growth are the two ones. Highlight as being them.
Okay. How often do they come out?
Quarterly.
Okay. In Australia and in US?
Quarterly. You do get looks from different surveys. There's a couple of different surveys people run purchasing manager PMI. Indexes, via PMIs, which will, or there's business confidence and things like that. And those ones will give you indications about the hiring that's going on and other factors. But generally you get the quarterly stats, which will sort of confirm what's going on. The US has a whole range of different unemployment statistics that come out. They tend to be more about weekly reporting of unemployment. So you can get a little bit of feed from that. So there's fewer people becoming unemployed, but you don't get the employment side of it as well.
Yeah. Right.
And you can look at companies as well. There's lots of companies there's a couple of companies we have in our portfolios that are payroll focused. There's a couple of others competitors to it. They're actually quite good for getting information from as well. Not that they cover the whole market, but they generally cover enough of the market that you'll see.
Okay. So you watch them for announcements, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. So there's lots of short-term different factors that will also affect it.
Okay. Okay, where are we on this journey about good news and bad news?
At the moment, I think good news is good news still.
Okay, so you think good news is good news?
Yeah, I still think good news is good news. I do expect that at some stage, I think we'll have 3 or 4 months at least of rising inflation now. Just it's a bunch of technical reasons, but then after that, I think that's going to start fading. Mm-hmm. And if that's right, then it'll be a question about saying, okay, now how much support are you getting from central banks and how much support are you getting from governments? If there's lots and lots of support, then it's bad news is good news, you know, that weakening off.
Right, yes.
And if you don't though, then maybe it turns into bad news is bad news. but for the moment I think we're still in the good news is good news phase. And you know, it's not a you can't predict how central banks and governments, well, you can have a rough guess at what they've said they're going to do, but you know, we're in this artificial market, and we really just need to be trying to calibrate what's going on in the real world versus what a central bank's doing, and is there a connect between the two, and are they doing too much or too little? So and we had Ross Garneau on our podcast.
That's me.
A couple of weeks ago,
yep.
Yeah, and so that was, and he was just talking about how, you know, the Australian central bank was very much behind the curve. They kept on talking for years and years and years about how things were going to recover. You mm-hmm. know, yes, wage growth is low, but it's just about to bounce back. And then the next one, no, okay, it was down again, but it's about to bounce. And they did that for a period of 3 or 4 years. It was just constantly talking about how, you know, it's all happening next month. Don't worry about it. It's all happening next month, and it never did.
Yeah.
And so that was a clear disconnect. And at the time, we were very much on that same side about saying they've got it wrong.
Yeah.
At the moment, it looks like they're paying enough attention, appropriate attention to it, and they've got it right.
Okay.
But it's.
Did it serve us well going into the COVID situation, actually, that they were behind in that sense? Or
no.
So we were worse off because of it?
It meant we could do more rate cuts because we hadn't cut the rates already.
Yeah.
But we would have been better off with more people employed and,
okay,
you know, and lower debt levels generally in the economy.
Yeah,
and
right.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So there would have been – I think for me the main part to all of this is the more people you can keep employed, the better. Because and it's about saying within your economy you want as many people working as possible that want to work, you know, as possible within it. The real problem, one of the real problems with downturns is there'll be plenty of middle managers in their 50s and 60s who lost their jobs in the coronavirus, who will never have another job again. And that's the part that really damages your economy going forward, is you've just got this whole cohort of people that will just never work, and so they'll never add anything back to the economy. And it's not good for them. You know, you get drug abuse and you get, you know, psychological issues and things like that. So, one of the key things about economics generally is we're trying to do the most amount of good for the most amount of people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, one of the key drivers is making sure that with, you know, anyone who wants to work can have a job. So that's sort of the key.
So this is a bit of a tangent, but I recently heard that there have been calls for a review of the RBA and their mandate. Do you think that we're in need of that?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it a structural thing or maybe more actually a bias of who is running it, or it's actually just a culturally ingrained thing, that conservatism that we've seen? And probably Stevens was the same, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think you can have. I think you can have groupthink. You've generally seen within the RBA, people have been promoted internally, and there's not a lot of. They have an external board of business people, but there hasn't been a lot of senior executives from other central banks. So we saw recently, a few years ago, the Bank of England appointed Mark Carney, who was the Canadian central banker, and. Their chief economist just retired, actually, Andy Haldane, and he was very big on shaking things up and actually looking at things in different ways and using, you know, some of the stuff he was using was bits about, you know, he was using biology examples about saying, okay, there's systems where, you know, they're complex systems and they look like they're really stable, and then they all of a sudden they hit a point and they become unstable.
Okay.
And saying, well, there's a lot of finance parts that actually look a lot like that. And whereas finance people were saying, hey, things are looking really stable, everything's fine, versus actually saying, well, that's not the case. If you hit certain points, you know, the whole thing becomes unstable. And so it's a good example of just shaking, having people in there that are shaking things up and looking at things in different ways. Mm-hmm. And I think that might be a benefit for the Australian Central Bank.
Okay.
I think obviously there's bits about independence and making sure that there are independence and how can you avoid conflicts and so I think even if things were going really well, it's well worth having a regular review of the central bank anyway. So
it's like you were saying before about your portfolio, you know, it's be critical. It's nothing wrong with being critical as often as possible.
But the RBA's certainly on the wage price forecasts have got a long history of being wrong. They certainly seem to have flipped around now and be a lot more conservative on it, and acknowledging some of their own errors, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think for any organisation, re-examining is a good thing.
Okay. All right. So you think that we're going to play out the good news is good news path. Mm. So valuations or earnings will grow into valuations, so we won't be as overvalued in a couple of years as we are now. We've got the bad news is good news is when you get bad economic news and it leads to the market thinking there's going to be more fiscal and monetary stimulus, or it's going to stay longer. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Actually, sorry, I just want to jump in very quickly on that good news factors. Is there's a common one for I think a lot of people have money on the sidelines, basically cash in their bank account, and looking at it saying, oh, look, market's a bit expensive. I'm just going to wait till they're a bit cheaper and then I'll buy some. Yeah. And the danger of doing that right now is that because there's so much central bank and government support to hold markets where they are, is that, yes, we've got a bit of an earnings chasm beneath us, but we're sort of halfway across it already. And if markets stay high and just keep grinding higher and then earnings, markets going up at 7% per annum, and earnings are going up at 10-15% per annum, then you might find in 3 years' time that markets have risen, 5 or 6, 7% per annum over 3 years, and they're up 20%. Earnings are up 50%, and now you've never had a chance to buy in, and so you've been sitting there the whole time with this money saying, and so yes, we do think there's air for caution, and so we're trying to be quite cautious in our portfolio and save some extra. Buy stocks we think have got limited downside, save some extra cash in case markets do fall. But there's a danger for people sitting on cash right now is saying you just might not get the chance to ever buy.
Wow. Some of the stuff that I've seen you write recently certainly has talked about maybe we get a correction. But now also you're thinking maybe we don't. So you're certainly not saying that it's impossible for us to get another correction.
Mm.
This cautiousness around this possibility of it not happening at all, and where is that going to leave you? Is obviously so important to note.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So good news is good news, but bad news is good news, and then good news is bad news. That's when we get good economic news and we're concerned that they're going to rip the band-aid off too quickly on fiscal and monetary stimulus.
Yep, or that inflation is going to push up bond yields. Mm-hmm. And so that's we'll get these because there's so much debt around.
Okay.
The interest rates people have to pay on debt will go up, and then that will crash the economy because interest rates are too high. So it's effectively saying policy error in the end. It's saying central banks won't try and stop it, and they'll let things go, and that therefore, the market will come undone.
They've certainly been talking the talk that they're not going to do that from what I've seen lately.
It'll be very interesting now, the period. So we're about to go into this period where we call it cycling low numbers. So last year, inflation in around this time was still, only just the start of the coronavirus. It was still not too bad. And then we actually had deflation for a couple of months. So we had this leg downwards and then bounce back up.
Yeah.
And so now what we're going to be starting to look at is when we look at today's inflation versus a year ago, we're going to be looking from so last month we were looking across the gap. We were looking at the high point where we started to today. Over the next month or two, we're going to be moving, inflation will move up slightly, But the starting point will be moving down.
Yes.
And so it's going to start looking like we've got much higher inflation.
Okay.
Than what we're
going to
do.
And absolute price level will still be lower, like this 50 and 80 that you were talking about before.
Yeah, and so so the question we'll come back to when we're going to print 3-4% inflation rates, just because of that low base effect. That's the part
that's relevant because I guess from my understanding, most central banks are targeting Australia's 2-3.
Most other central banks are targeting 2. Yeah,
two?
Most of them target 2. And so at that point, it's obviously one thing for central banks to say, no, we're just going to look through this inflation. When inflation's 1.5-2%, everyone just goes, yeah, that's fine. There'll be a clamour, though, for people who do think inflation is a problem to say, hey, we just printed 4% inflation or 5% inflation. You know, next step's Zimbabwe or Germany from the 1930s. You know, it's that they'll be out and sort of, you know, pushing to say that. So we think at that stage that the central bank will do what they're saying, say they're going to do, but maybe that's not the case. Or the other step is maybe Biden comes out and says, you know what, it's not $2 trillion anymore. It's $2 trillion of explicit spending, and we're going to lend another $5 trillion to local governments to go and spend a bunch of money, or let somebody else to gear up, and or let states do stuff. And so maybe that turns into this massive. Maybe it does turn into genuine inflation. We're not there yet, but that's sort of the most likely. Right. Scenario that could turn into inflation.
Okay. So at what point would you start saying, okay, this looks like genuine inflation? Is it June, July, later?
Because,
there was a bottom, wasn't there, in prices?
Yeah.
Did you see that? And then anything cycling that, would you?
We're looking over 2 years or over 6 months. So looking at what's a six-month inflation rate? What's the 2-year inflation rate?
Okay.
Let's try and get rid of that 1-year version where we know it's bad numbers. Mm-hmm. Well, we know it's not bad numbers, but it's an atypical number that, you know, isn't reflective of what's really going on. And so we want to look at sort of different time periods around that. It's also where it's coming from. So wage growth is the key part for me. If we're seeing lots of inflation because there's supply chains are still distorted and there's still lockdowns going on and companies aren't producing as much as they should, then I'm not as concerned about that type of inflation, because as soon as the lockdowns finish and the vaccines get out there, then that's coming back on, and the price pressure will go away.
It'll wash through.
Yeah. It's the inflation from things that are from pressures that will be sustained, and that most likely one of that is wages.
Okay.
But there doesn't look like any wage inflation. You know, Australia's basically printing the lowest wage inflation that's ever printed, and so we could double our wage inflation and still be, you know, not at an inflationary
levels.
Levels that's actually going to, you know, start bring it back to start flowing onto other goods. There's maybe commodities. There's some people arguing commodity prices are high, and so therefore that's going to drive inflation. I'm of the view that commodity prices, the prices themselves are actually already at sort of really high levels, and it's actually been more of a supply disruption. So when China came into the world and started producing a lot, we saw this massive increase in the amount of commodities needed, which then drove prices, and there's some inflation behind that. I don't think that's the case this time. The actual demand for commodities is high, but it's not so high that it's going to create inflation forever. It's been more about the supply disruptions. And supply disruptions, it's only temporary, because I can't get any parts for my car to run this, so I'll pay double or triple what I used to pay. But all the people who produce it, they're more than happy to produce it at the old price. They just can't at the moment because they haven't got the – and so they're working feverishly and trying to get their staff back on. Once their staff comes back on, the price is falling 70% back from, I was paying triple amount, and it'll fall back to the original level.
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add to the good news, bad news story that we've been running here?
No, I think the only other thing is that look, it's obviously some clever semantics that in terms of doing good news, bad news, bad news, good news, and all that type of stuff like that. And it seems like the answer must be good news is good news, because that's the only one that makes logical sense. Bad news is good news, and good news is bad news don't make logical sense, and therefore they must be wrong. And so I just wanted to highlight that. look, right now I do think the good news is good news is the right story, but it's but the semantics sort of help make it seem probably more
probable than
it probably is.
Okay.
And we are watching the other scenarios and trying to ascertain which one of them sort of is where it's going to end up.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I think we'll call that an end to our podcast on good news and bad news and what they mean. I hope that you have taken away something from this that will help provide some insight to Damien's March performance report. We'll put the link to that in our show notes. So before I say goodbye for today, if you have any feedback for me about this episode or any ideas for future podcast topics, please let me know in the YouTube comment section or send me an email at contact@nucleuswealth.com. And if you'd like to hear more from Nucleus Wealth, check out our other podcasts, Nucleus Investment Insights, or head over to nucleuswealth.com/content. You can stay up to date with news from Nucleus Wealth on social media or subscribe to our newsletter from our homepage. And I'd like to thank my producer, Jaden Stent, for his work on the show today. And finally, if you know anyone who you think would get something out of today's episode, let them know about it and share with a friend and help our show grow. So thanks again for tuning in for myself and the team. And I look forward to catching you at the next one. Cheers.